Good evening. The federal government announces that journalist WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been indicted for 17 counts on violating the Espionage Act. An escalation of the Trump administration's attacks on journalism, Assange now faces 175 years in prison. This is the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, May 23rd, 2019. I'm Paul DiRienzo. The U.S. Justice Department unveiled 17 new criminal charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange on Thursday, saying he unlawfully published the names of classified sources and conspired with and assisted ex-Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning in obtaining access to classified information. The superseding indictment comes a little more than a month after the Justice Department unsealed a narrower criminal case against Assange. Assange was initially charged with conspiring with Manning to gain access to a government computer as part of a 2010 leak by WikiLeaks of hundreds of thousands of U.S. military reports about the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The decision to charge Assange with espionage crimes is notable and unusual. Most cases involving the theft of classified information have targeted government employees like Manning and not the people who published the information itself. The secret document that Assange published was provided by the former Army intelligence analyst who was convicted at a court-martial trial in 2013 of leaking the records. The Justice Department's decision to pursue Espionage Act charges signals a dramatic escalation under President Trump to crack down on leaks of classified information and aim squarely at First Amendment protections for journalists. Most recently, law enforcement officials charged a former intelligence analyst with giving classified documents to The Intercept, a national security news website. The government has never charged a journalist under the Espionage Act. The New York Times wrote Thursday in response to the indictments against Assange that though he is not a conventional journalist, much of what Mr. Assange does at WikiLeaks is difficult to distinguish in legally meaningful ways from what traditional news organizations like the New York Times do. The Obama administration had considered charging Assange under the Espionage Act, but never did out of concerns that such a case would chill traditional journalism. The Espionage Act is a law that was passed in 1917. It was intended to prohibit interference with military operations or recruitment, to prevent insubordination in the military, and to prevent the support of United States enemies during wartime. Among those charged with offenses under the act are German-American Socialist Congressman and newspaper editor Victor L. Berger, labor leader and five-time Socialist Party of America candidate Eugene V. Debs, anarchist Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, former Watchtower Bible and Tract Society president Joseph Franklin Rutherford, and Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. The Rosenbergs were eventually executed under another law, the Atomic Energy Act of 1946, which made passing nuclear secrets to a foreign government punishable by death. The law was amended in 1954 to eliminate the death penalty. The first journalism source charged under the law was Daniel Ellsberg. Charges against him were eventually dropped when it was revealed that the Nixon administration had been spying on him. Ellsberg spoke moments ago with WBAI.
This is an attack directly on the First Amendment and on journalism in America, and it will have precedence for the whole world. I've expected this whenever Julian Assange got extradited to this country, if he did, and with the appeals going on that, I expected that to be a year or even two from now, perhaps after he'd gone to Sweden. But instead, it's coming right now. The reason I didn't expect this attack on using the Espionage Act so soon was that will definitely complicate the decision and the appeals of extraditing him from Britain, because the extradition treaty there has a clause that they're not to extradite anyone for political cause, a political offense. And this is very clearly what this is. Well, we'll see whether the UK is concerned about that or not. And then there'll be a question of Sweden's claim. And again, they're not supposed to extradite for a political offense. So this complicates the question of extradition. But if and when he is extradited to the United States to face these counts, he will be the first person, and he's not an American citizen, of course, to start with, but he will be the first journalist ever to be indicted in the United States for giving information to the American public. I was the first source, a former official, to be tried under the Espionage Act. I faced 12 counts, including one of conspiracy. facing 115 years. He's facing 17 counts under the Espionage Act and one for conspiracy. So he's facing 175 years. Frankly, as a former defendant, that doesn't make much difference. It's a life sentence, whichever you're looking at, even with good behavior. So they're trying to put a journalist in prison for releasing information to the American public, which is could not be a more direct violation of the First Amendment, the freedom of the press. It makes a mockery of the First Amendment, which is the absolute foundation stone of this republic, of this democracy over here. And it deserves the highest priority attention from everyone in the press, but actually from people concerned with civil liberties in this country at all. It certainly concerns me. I'm 88 years old. I didn't expect really to be spending all my time on this case or a case like this, but I'll have to, because, as I say, my experience of being the first person prosecuted under this has given me an understanding of this particular law, 18 U.S.C. 793, paragraphs D and E, which I happen to know as a non-lawyer, because I was the first defendant under it. And it's been used now by, let's see how many, about a dozen people since me, nine of them under President Obama, more than three previous presidents combined. But Obama studied the DOJ, studied the Assange case, wanted to use him as a precedent, really, I think, for getting at journalists, and yet decided not to do it over a matter since 2010. Now that's 9 years ago, because it was so blatant a violation of the First Amendment. And they weren't sure that that wouldn't be noticed by appeals court and by the Supreme Court. So they didn't. They were afraid that it would chill journalism, which it obviously is intended to do and will do. Even the prosecution, whether he's convicted or not, as of this hour and today, every journalist in America now knows that for the first time, they are vulnerable to criminal prosecution for doing their job. The law was intended to be used against spies, and has been used exclusively for that reason until my case, 1971. When I was indicted, not as a spy. In fact, the prosecution made a motion, which was accepted, not to use the word espionage in the courtroom because it would prejudice the case against him. It was so obvious that what I was doing in revealing thousands of pages, 7,000 pages of top secret documents to the public, was not done with the intention of helping a foreign power in a war or not in a war, but intention of helping our democracy discover lies by the government over a 23-year period at that point. So they didn't even want to, they didn't want the jury to think, well, this guy's obviously not a spy. They didn't charge me with that. It was the first non-espionage case. This, too, is a non-espionage case, but it's against a journalist, not a source. And even Nixon did not, in the end, try to prosecute the New York Times. The New York Times itself acknowledges today, I just saw it, that what Julian Assange did was essentially what the New York Times does all the time. In other words, for all the efforts of this Justice Department, a guy named John Damer, apparently, to distinguish Julian Assange from journalists and publishers, and what he did from what, quote, responsible journalists do, they're charging with what journalists do all the time, in part for requesting and soliciting classified information. Well, I couldn't count the number of times I have been solicited for classified information over the years, and a thousand other people have, by the Times, the Post, the AP, whoever else. That's what journalists do. And they've never been prosecuted for it before, because you can't have a free press that is subject to criminal charges for that. You ask what the intent of the law was. It was, by all the legislative history, that is the discussion in Congress when it was passed in 1917, just after war had been declared against, it was to get German spies in, and any kind of spies, even friendly spies from friendly countries like Israel. Jonathan Pollard is in prison still for having information to Israel. And to use that against a source of information to the American public, and I have to keep saying over and over, I was the first, is to define the American public pretty much as the enemy, which is the way the executive branch, of which I was part for a long time, sees the public. But they don't come right out in court and say it. And so Trump is breaking that tradition of non-violating the First Amendment on that condition. That's today. It's a historic day and a very ominous one. He is doing what Nixon actually contemplated doing, going directly after publishers and journalists and not just their sources. Nixon actually was considering, in fact, had a grand jury, let me just say, not considering. There was a grand jury that was going after Neil Sheehan and Hedrick Smith, who helped publish the Pentagon Papers, both of the New York Times. And actually, their lawyer expected them to be indicted. But the conditions under which my prosecution was dismissed, finally, in May of 73, of illegally overhearing me on warrantless wiretaps and taking attempts to kill me on May 3rd, 1972, and burglarizing my psychiatrist's office and so forth. All of those things prejudiced the prosecution of the people who had published what I gave them, that grand jury was dropped. As far as I know, that's the first and last time that they got that close to prosecuting a journalist until now. Obama, as I just said, considered it for years since 2010 and decided not to do it, that they would lose in any way, would chill journalism, which their Department of Justice purported not to want to do. They were already chilling journalism by prosecuting sources, frankly, but this one they were going to lose because it's so clearly a violation, a misuse of the Espionage Act, as is this case, an even more blatant, unconstitutional misuse of the Espionage Act. You asked what the difference was between Trump and Nixon. Nixon was faced impeachment for violating the Constitution and a number of criminal acts against me as a source. Trump is even more blatant about violating the Constitution than Richard Nixon. Is that a surprise? I don't suppose so. But it's a terrible precedent, and he will not be the last to do this if he gets away with it. This case should be demanded that on constitutional grounds, this case should be dropped, and really the Attorney General should be subject to impeachment for bringing this case at all. Yes, it should be another count in impeachment proceedings if those go against Trump.
And that's Daniel Ellsberg, who was charged under the Espionage Act for revealing the Pentagon Papers to the Washington Post, charges that were eventually dropped. A former New York Times reporter and columnist for TruthDig.com is Chris Hedges. He says the charges against Assange are an ominous message to all reporters.
This is part of the preordained judicial lynching of Julian Assange. I think no one expected that the first public charge of hacking or assisting Chelsea Manning into the hacking of a government computer was the end of it. I think all of us expected the Espionage Act to be used, although we must be clear that Julian Assange is not an American citizen, and WikiLeaks is not a U.S.-based news organization. So the very use of the Espionage Act against Julian Assange, who is an Australian citizen and had been an Ecuadorian citizen until Lenin Moreno revoked the citizenship, is just another example of judicial overreach and the extent to which the empire will go to persecute those journalists, or in Assange's case, publishers, who expose the inner workings and the crimes of empire. That's what this is about. It is a very ominous day for the press. They will hardly stop with Assange. The failure on the part of established media organizations like the New York Times, The Guardian, Der Spiegel, all of whom printed over the course of several days the revelations provided by WikiLeaks, is extremely short-sighted, because none of this is about espionage. None of this is about manipulation by a foreign power. What this is about is the ability of the empire, the American empire, to create a kind of cone of silence, so that its activities, its crimes, including war crimes, its fraud, its anti-democratic efforts around the world to install puppets and client regimes, is hidden from public view. That's what this is about, and it's accompanied by terrible forms of character assassination. I know Julian pretty well. We all have flaws, and he's no exception. But he's not being persecuted for his vices. He's being persecuted for his virtues.
What is the antidote to this? What is it possible that that people should do in response to this?
Well, I'm flying to London for the final hearing on June 12th, and I think we have to make our voices heard, especially journalists have to decry what's happening and the persecution and the attempt to, in essence, end investigative journalism into the sources of power. That doesn't mean we will succeed, but we have a moral obligation to decry what's happening and to be heard. So I'll be at the courthouse. I will certainly am holding events in London with George Galloway and others. We can't be silent, because this is the first step. And those of us who attempt to continue in the tradition of investigative journalism that isn't co-opted by corporate or imperial power, you know, we're next.
And what's happening on June 12th exactly?
Well, this is his hearing over the extradition. And unfortunately, the comments by the judge show that the British judicial system has been as co-opted as our own. But it's about whether he will be extradited. And of course, this has long been the goal of the American state, they've been working for many years on this along with the British government, so that he will be shackled and have a hood put over his head and stuffed on a CIA dark flight and brought back and placed in the equivalent of a black site on U.S. territory.
What does that mean for somebody like me or other reporters who aren't very powerful or aren't very well known, who might come across some information like this?
This is the warning. If you attempt to shine a light into the inner workings of power, this is what's going to happen. And if anyone thinks this is going to end with Julian Assange, then they understand nothing about despotic power, or they haven't read any history.
Right. So basically, if you're a powerless journalist who's just a reporter doing their job, you don't have a huge organization behind you, you could wind up doing your job right into a federal prison for the rest of your life.
Well, that's right. But I think we should be clear that they intend to go after any journalist, even if they do have an organization behind them. And the fact that they are willing to deform law to go after someone who is not a U.S. citizen and whose news organization is not based in the United States. I mean, how can this guy be charged with the Espionage Act, which is the equivalent of our version of the British Foreign Secrets Act, which is about an American, a U.S. citizen, passing secret information, potentially damaging information to a hostile power. It's an utter corruption and misuse of the Espionage Act. They tried to use it against Daniel Ellsberg. Obama used it against a series of whistleblowers, I think 8 or 9 times, Kiriakou, Edward Snowden, and others. But it's a reinterpretation of law by judicial fiat, which is nothing new. The Supreme Court has been doing that with Citizens United and, you know, the right to privacy and everything else. But it's just another example of the corruption of the rule of law, which is essentially creates the bulwark for tyranny when law no longer is able to constrain the actions of power.
Very interesting. Anything you'd like to add?
This is extremely important, which is why I'm going to fly to London for that week and report on it and write on it. I may even visit Julian if I can get in. It's very, very important and momentous in terms of a benchmark exposing the assault of the press and the inability of a free press to do its job.
Former New York Times reporter Chris Hedges. Hedges says he'll travel to London next month to support Julian Assange as he fights extradition to the United States. And in national news, she's calling for an intervention to save the nation from him. He says she's crazy. The enmity between President Donald Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi deteriorated Thursday into rude and then some questioning of his fitness for office and her sanity, with personal attacks flowing from both the nation's top elected officials after a dramatic blow-up at the White House. However intended, the exchanges left uncertain ahead of the 2020 election whether Trump and the Democrats will be able to work together in serious must-pass tasks such as funding the government and raising the federal borrowing limit, let alone thornier issues such as immigration, national security, and more. Pelosi went first with demure shrugs and practiced sass. Then as a tornado warning blared across Washington, Trump followed with a derisive nickname, something he had declined to give her up till now. She's a mess, Trump told reporters at an afternoon news conference in which he lined up White House staff to testify to his calmness the day before when he walked out after 3 minutes at a meeting with Pelosi and Senate Democratic leader Charles Schumer. Crazy Nancy. I watched Nancy and she was all crazy yesterday. As for himself, he declared, I'm an extremely stable genius. Pelosi scolded back. When the extremely stable genius starts acting more presidential, I'll be happy to work with him on infrastructure, trade, and other issues, she tweeted. There was more before and after that exchange for political enthusiasts with the time and interest to follow along. For those who don't, the theater came a day after Trump stalked out of the cabinet room demanding an end to all congressional investigations before he could work with Congress on repairing U.S. infrastructure or other matters. He apparently was wound up generally over the ongoing congressional Trump-Russia probes into whether he obstructed justice, and specifically by Pelosi's jab a few minutes earlier at the Capitol that he's engaged in a cover-up. I don't do cover-ups, fumed Trump, who is fighting subpoenas for testimony by current and former White House officials. Hanging over the increasingly personal exchanges is a drumbeat among about 24 Democrats and 1 Republican to launch impeachment hearings against Trump based on special counsel Robert Mueller's report, which described Trump's efforts to block his federal investigation. Pelosi has resisted that impeachment pressure, preferring a methodical process by which Congress investigates and lays out the facts on the questions of obstruction of justice. She says the House is not on a path to impeachment, but she's been clear this week that an impeachment inquiry is not off the table. And finally, a graduation speaker at New York University called Trump a fascist and labeled Israel an apartheid state in his speech on Monday. Speaking at the convocation for the university's Graduate School of Arts and Sciences, Stephen William Thrasher, an NYU alum and professor at Northwestern, praised the graduates for their resistance against the current administration.
And I am so proud of NYU's chapters of Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voices for Peace and of GSOC and of the NYU student government and of my colleagues in the Department of Social and Cultural Analysis for supporting the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against the apartheid state government in Israel. Because this is what we are called to do. This is our NYU legacy, that we are connected in radical love And we have a duty and a privilege in this position to protect not the most popular amongst us, but the most vulnerable amongst us on every campus where we serve, in every community where we live, in every place that we work. This is our duty.
Stephen William Thrasher speaking at the NYU commencement on Wednesday. And that's some of the news for Thursday, May 23rd, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is James Irsay. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for joining us.